shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Joe.
Welcome to Shoot the Defence, part of the FNX Network. I'm your host, Stel, and tonight we have a stacked show. Joining me, our Italian football expert and author of 20 Italian games, Giancarlo Rinaldi, Budapest Honved's new goalkeeper and good friend of the show, David Groff, and making his Shoot the Defence debut, creator of HungarianFootball.com and contributor to World Soccer, ESPN and Goal, Thomas Mortimer. Gents, great to have you all on. Thank you very much for appearing.
Hello. Yeah,
it's a pleasure to be here.
Great to be back, boys.
Yeah, good to have you back, Sunshine. How's your training been?
Yeah, it's been okay, mate. Brutal, I played my last game for the second division team on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Then I started pre-season with my new club, Honved, on Monday. So, yeah, I'm not feeling too fresh. But
no?
Yeah, it's going well.
And have you noticed a different...
Well, intensity-wise, it's a lot different, you know. It feels more like... the English kind of training that I was used to. So, we got an Italian coach actually.
Okay.
So, and training's been good.
And what's his name?
I enjoy it. Marco Rossi.
Do you know Giancarlo?
It's not Marco Rossi that used to play for Fiorentina, is it?
I'm not actually sure who he played for, but I can Google him for you right now.
Google your boss.
You know, he's my new head coach, but I know nothing about him.
I think he might have been, you know, because he had quite an illustrious career.
Played for Fiorentina back in the day, so it could be him.
Yeah, I'm Googling him right now.
Well,
I think he played for Torino FC, Sampdoria. He played in Germany for Eintracht Frankfurt. That's all I know.
You using old Wikipedia, right?
Yeah.
Good old Wiki.
So it might not be true.
Well, you can ask him if you want. I mean, you know, pick up the phone while you're on Skype and say, "Boss, I'm on the show. Can you tell me what team you used to play for?"
I don't think he would be happy that I'm not in bed yet.
All right, fine. We'll keep it stum then. Wonderful, brilliant. Well, fantastic. I'll tell you what, gents, let's talk about the Euros and Giancarlo. Let's start with the Azzurri's passage to France. Now, on paper, it seemed like a straightforward group. Malta, Azerbaijan and Bulgaria weren't going to pose much of a threat, while Norway don't look anything like the side they had once upon a time. Realistically, the only side that would stand in the way of Topsoil was Croatia, and the point deduction made things a little bit easier for Antonio Conte's men. Now, if you fast forward to the 31st of May, where Conte announces 23-man squad for the competition, and saying, and I quote, "The choices I made, we reflected a great deal and picked the best at our disposal. As far as I'm concerned, I have some pretty precise ideas." Now, Marchisio and Verratti miss out through injury, while Balotelli didn't do anything to warrant a call-up. Is this the most underwhelming Italy squad you've ever seen? And how far do you think they can go?
If it's not the most underwhelming, it's certainly pretty close to it. Mm. It's not an exciting side, I mean, on paper anyway. I mean, the only thing I would say is that, I mean, I think that defensive unit is a pretty strong one. If you think it took Juve to the Champions League final a couple of years ago and pretty far in the competition the last time, then the defence is solid, this we know, but the midfield, as you mentioned, suffered a couple of hammer blows before the tournament, so you know the cover for that defence is not great, creativity is not brilliant, and I was just reading La Gazzetta dello Sport today, says that this is the weakest attack Italy's taken to a major championship in something like 30 or 40 years. I mean, I think the five strikers have scored 11 international goals between them. So you can see that it's kind of going back to old school, I suppose. Mm. So that it might be the defence that takes Italy forward in the championships. And you can get through, you know, with the best third place team get through, you could probably get through with 3-0 draws. Mm. And that's the old school Italian way. And but it's hard to see, you know, I mean, my most optimistic prediction would be the semi-finals. I think maybe quarter-finals might be as far as the squad can go. I hope I'm wrong, because you know there has been this kind of pessimism before 1982 in the World Cup. I'm old enough to remember that. they called that the worst Italy squad ever, and you know that kind of the team bonded. They found a striker in Paolo Rossi, and the rest is history. You know, and there have been times before where Italy have been pretty pessimistic about their chances, and something's clicked, and they've managed it. But you know, looking on paper, there aren't really many standout names beyond the defence. Certainly, you know, that would have the other teams in the competition particularly scared.
Mm. And has Antonio Conte's impending move to Chelsea hindered any of their preparations?
I don't think so, really. I mean, I think the signs were there fairly early that he wasn't enjoying national team management as much as he did the club coaching. He needs that day-to-day, having the players at his disposal. I think he likes to mould a side that really buys into his mentality and kind of develops that. Almost of coaches like where it's, you know, it's us against the world, and you know he creates a strong unit, and that's hard to do if you only see the players maybe once every couple of months, where if you get your hands on them every day and every other day in training, you can kill them, as one of our guests we testify, you know, that managers like to do that. Absolutely. Conte likes to do that, so but I don't think that the knowledge that he's leaving has necessarily really had that much effect. And maybe this European Championships is the first prolonged spell really where he'll get the players, and he might be able to create the kind of team spirit that can take. That's certainly the card he's been playing all the way along, is, you know, don't think of the individuals. My biggest individual will be the team unit. So, you know, you hope, as an Italian fan anyway, that he can get more out of that team than the sum of its parts.
Mm. Now, Italy's opening game is against the hipsters' favourites, Belgium. It's no secret that Antonio Conte's preferred system is 3-5-2, but when you have attacking fullbacks, or wing-backs as they're called nowadays, is this a dangerous way of playing given the attacking threat Belgium pose?
I suppose that depends on the personnel, really, doesn't it? I mean, he's played on one flank recently. He's tried out Stefan El Shaarawy from Roma, and that would be a bold attacking option, but it would be a bit scary defensively. And generally, Antonio Candreva's played on the other side of that 3-5-2. He can do more of a job defensively, but again, you know, it's asking a big. It's asking a big shift from whoever plays those positions. Say the central three might be strong enough, and you know they'll certainly there's be few sides have a more experienced defensive trio than those Juventini. But it would be a gamble. But I think Conte certainly likes to think that his team can go out and impose its play on whoever they play. You know, and despite the fact that Belgium are strong, I think he'll be looking ideally to push these attacking wide players back and test their defensive capabilities out.
Tom, when people talk about title-winning teams, they always mention the spine. Now, I'm looking at Buffon, Chiellini, De Rossi and Pella. All fantastic players have got nothing to prove. Now, are you more optimistic about Italy's chances than Giancarlo?
I don't know. Obviously, I don't know anywhere near as much as Giancarlo, but I think they'll do well. Like you say, like spines do make teams, and this competition is going to be, and it's not really at the best quality, is it? Really, you look at like the hipsters' favourite Belgium. They were pretty poor against Norway in a friendly the other day. You think of the best three teams: Germany, Spain, and France, they've all got weaknesses as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if Italy did go far in this tournament. Obviously, like Giancarlo said, they've got a really good defence, and that could see them quite far, really.
I find it extremely interesting how, you know, about Conte's love for Juventus, and he's called up three central defenders out of the four, and they all used to play for Juventus. It's fantastic. So he's obviously got a plan. I just think that it's come to the point where people are looking at Italy thinking, oh, you know, their squad isn't great, it isn't full of stars. But at the end of the day, these are the dangerous teams. You know, you got your Austrias, you got these other nations that have got lesser known players, but you can't rule them out.
Yeah, exactly. I think the tournament's wide open in general, really. I can't really see that many quality sides who won't be beaten. Like, people are saying that England have got a really good chance as well, but England's squad's not exactly bursting with quality either. So, yeah, I just think the tournament's quite wide open.
Absolutely. And David, there's no Pirlo this time around, so will it be a case of no Pirlo, no party? Where is the creative genius in this squad?
Definitely, I think that's their biggest worry. You know, if you look at the squad, it doesn't look very exciting. You know, they look solid. Defensively, I think they got one of the best defenses. They got one of the best goalkeepers, but I don't know who... They don't really have a similar type of player to Pirlo. I think they got plenty of box-to-box midfielders, you know. But I don't see anybody in the middle who will dictate the tempo of the team. So maybe out on the right they have El Shaarawy or Insigne, but that's as much as I can see there. Kandreva looks a really good player, but I don't really see where the goals will come from.
Giancarlo, tell me about Giancarini, because he's on loan at Bologna from Sunderland. How has he worked his way into the national team?
I think it kind of comes back to what you were saying earlier about this Juventus block, because, you know, you said he's called up 3 out of 4 Juve defenders, but if you actually look at the squad, I think I counted 10 players who either are Juventus players or have been Juventus players. So Giancarini, very much a known quantity for Conte. He's also, in fairness, he's one of those players which, and I think every country has them, where their club form almost, they seem transformed when they play for their country. They seem to give something extra. And he's certainly, Giancarini under Cesare Prandelli was really a revelation at major tournaments, you know, and did deliver for the national team almost more than he did for his club sides. And you do get these players that, for whatever reason, as you get the other way around, where players who look brilliant for their club side just can't quite graduate or adapt to the national team. And that's what Giancarini does. And he's also, I think he's one of these players that, and I think managers like this kind of player, that he can, I was going to say he can be equally awful in a number of positions, but, you know, that's not fair to him. He plays in a number of positions, and if you get 2 or 3 of those players in a squad, it does give you adaptability. And, you know, we're assuming Italy will play 3-5-2, but, you know, Conte still likes to experiment. He's tried a 4-4-2 in training. He has played a 4-3-3. So, you know, Giancarini is one of these players that you can shift him around the pitch, and he can slot into a variety of positions. And I think that's why he's landed his place in the squad, because he's adaptable, because Conte knows what he can provide, and also because his national team performances have actually exceeded what you see from him as a club player.
See, I was about to ask if he's the Italian James Milner, but then that bit at the end where he said that he's played so well for the national team, that you can forget that question now.
Yeah, no, I mean, he has, it surprised me playing for him, because I previously wondered why he was in squads, and he's turned out to be one of our best players at a couple of championships. So, you know, I think you have to give him credit for that. He has done well at big tournaments, so I think that's the thinking behind that selection. And as I say, you know, there's certainly a black and white stripe running through this team, definitely, even into the players that Conte put on standby. The other one was Daniele Rugani, who's a Juventus defender as well. So there was the prospect of four Juve defenders being in the squad. But in the end, he went with Angelo Bona, who's an ex-Juventus defender, to boost the contingent. So there really is a Juve heart. But that's partly because Juventus are one of the teams in Italy who does have faith in Italian players, who do play Italian players, whereas if you look at a lot of the other top teams in Italy, there are only a handful of Italians playing that he could actually pick anyway.
Fantastic. And before we move on, are there any players that you feel shouldn't have been left out? I'm not talking about players that are injured like your Marquisios and Verratti, but are there any players, like, for example, you're a Fiorentina fan, are there any players that you felt should have made the 23?
Not really. I mean, the only other, I mean, Fiorentina got, and I wanted to mention him, Federico Bernardeschi, one of the youngest players in the squad anyway, from Fiorentina, who's kind of burst into the team. And I'm hoping that, you know, he was saying, doesn't look a very exciting squad. I'm hoping he gets some game time, because I think he can be a game changer, and he is one of the most exciting members of the squad, so I hope he gets a chance to play. But the only other one in contention was defender Davide Astori, and he couldn't, I mean, it would have been nice to see him be part of the squad, but I don't think you could really make a compelling case for his inclusion. The one player who, general consensus, seems to be disappointed that he missed out was another of the Oriundi, the overseas Italians, Jorginho, who plays for Napoli. And certainly on Thiago Motta's performance last night against Finland, it did look like he could have been a player who could have had a part to play, and perhaps a more natural substitute for Pirlo. Nobody's going to be Andrea Pirlo. I think we have to accept that. But Jorginho from Napoli was one who people thought should have been in. I could see that. Again, Conte called up Stefano Sturaro from Juventus. Personally, probably would have rather seen Jorginho make the squad. He had a very good season with Napoli. Giacomo Bonaventura from Milan was another player who was potentially could have been included. Sebastian Jovinko, but playing in the MLS, probably hurt him as well. As you mentioned, you know, the biggest regret really is up front, that Mario Balotelli. If we think that 4 years ago when you know, he demolished Germany at the European Championships, I really thought a star was born, and the Italy attack was sorted for years to come, but he's gone so far off the rails that was Conte. He was never going to call him up. And the other injury again, really, which has hit Italy, was Giuseppe Rossi, who, you know, looked like a good partner for Balotelli as well up front, but he's been really, I mean, he's a Fiorentina player who I think would have been a certainty for, although he's out on loan just now in Spain, but I think he would have been a certainty to be in the squad if he'd avoided injury and been playing regularly, but he's had neither of those things. So I don't think, you know, in Italy, we love a bit of polemica, they call a bit of argument, but I actually don't think there wasn't that much argument really when Conte announced his squad. Other than, as I say, to me, a glaring omission probably was Jorginho, but the rest really, you know, it came down to personal preference probably over who you might like to see in the squad.
Fantastic, thank you, Giancarlo. And now to one of the few unknowns of the competition, Hungary, who qualified for their first major tournament in 3 decades, beating Norway 3-1 in aggregate in the playoffs. Tom, Holland's 8-1 victory over Hungary in October 2013 was probably the darkest day in Hungarian football history. Aside from head coaches, what's changed since that night in Amsterdam that's led to qualification? Can you pinpoint a turning point?
Yeah, that was a dark day indeed. I think it's the record loss as well. Mm. I think the change is the change in mentality, and that didn't happen under the next manager. The next manager was Attila Pintér, who was sacked after his first competitive game when we lost to Northern Ireland. And the next manager to come in was Dardai, and Dardai just brought like this newfound like belief, and the team was like completely visible with that change on the pitch. Like, you could just see it within them. They had this like new belief, and his first game was away in Romania, which is like Hungary's biggest rivals, like the eternal derby sort of thing, and you could just see that like the players had this belief and they had this fight that they didn't have before under the old coaches like Egavari. And 12 months before, Hungary actually played in Romania, and they lost 3-0, and they got absolutely battered. They just like wilted under the pressure. But under Dardai, even in his first game, they had like this belief, this hunger that they could actually succeed. And that is literally the change in mentality, like, because Hungary for years have been sort of this like meek side who would roll over to these weak sides, and then they'd get battered by the better sides. Mm. They even lost to Malta like in 2004 or something. So like they've always, since the glory days, they've sort of had this like sort of weak mentality. And Dardai, because he's a former captain, he's playing Germany, played for Hertha Berlin, he's their record appearance maker. He's got something about him, and he brought that to the national team. And even when Dardai left and Stork came in, Stork is another German, that belief is there and that hunger is there. And that is the big change. There's not been like new personnel who have come into the team, not much extra quality, a couple here and there, but it is the change in mentality. It's just crazy.
Stork, who's the current head coach of the national team, was assistant coach of Hertha, who actually brought in Dardai, didn't he?
Yeah, is that right?
And Dardai was youth coach at Hertha Berlin when he was appointed Hungary national team manager, am I right?
Yeah, he was the under-16 manager when he was appointed Hungarian manager, but he was only appointed Hungary manager like on an interim caretaker basis.
Right.
And then he was so successful that he, in I think it was the January or the December, he took the job full-time. And then in January, or no, it might have been about February, March time, Hertha Berlin sacked their manager.
Mm.
So he took the Hertha Berlin job as well as the Hungary job.
Wow.
So he's like, all of his dreams had come at once, really. He's a massive Hertha legend, sort of a Hungary legend as well.
Mm.
And he got both of the jobs at the same time. It was mental.
Fantastic. David, Hungary have quite a few well-known players. Zoltán Gera, Tamás Priskin, spent a considerable amount of time in England. You've got Zsuzsák, who's had a spell at PSV, while 40-year-old goalkeeper Gábor Kiraly is recognised more for his grey tracksuit bombs than his time at Hertha, Crystal Palace, Aston Villa, etc., etc. What can you tell me about Laszlo Kleinheisler? I hear the nation has high hopes for him. Have I even pronounced his name right for a start?
Yeah. But the boy actually came out of nowhere, really. You know, like, he was in a difficult situation. He was playing for Videoton about a year ago, but he refused to sign a new contract, so they put him in the reserves, but he didn't get any game time, not even in the reserves. So he was a Hungary under-21 international, so he was playing under Bernd Stork, you know, for the under-21s.
Okay.
So I think the only reason they called him up was, I think they had a couple of injuries, so they needed some players to make up the numbers in training. And he was so impressive in training that he actually... He stayed in the squad, and he went. It was just before the Norway game, you know, before we qualified. But I don't know him personally, but I have a couple of teammates who played with him, and obviously we talk about him quite a bit, you know, because it's a sensation here, you know, that he came out of nowhere. You know, he was playing for a third division team, really, or he was training with a third division team, because Videoton's reserve team playing the third division here. So it's not even professional, it's more like semi-pro. And, but he, you know, you can see it, he's a really good player, even at international level. He's two-footed, he's brave. So, yeah, I think the country has high hopes for him now. And he's still only 23 years old, so he's not late from anything.
Now, when you say the country's got high hopes for him, are we talking... I don't know, like a Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain or a, I don't know, John Stones kind of thing, because you know about the English press, you know how they hype up players and they put so much pressure on their shoulders. It doesn't happen in Italy so much anymore, I don't think, Giancarlo, so correct me if I'm wrong. But with the Hungarian national team, is there this immense pressure like you see in other countries?
You can't compare it to England, to be fair, but... you know, it's different. England always wants to win everything when they go into a tournament. That's what they talk about every time they go into it. Here, it's amazing. It's an amazing achievement that we qualified. You know, nobody expected it. even a couple of years ago, we didn't fill up the stadiums for national team games.
Mm.
It's only recently, since everybody got excited that we have a chance to qualify, since then we started filling up the stadiums. And obviously we built a few stadiums in the past few years, so the whole football is really improving. But the thing about him is that he's a different type of player than what we have at the moment. You know, he's exciting. He's just a different style. You know? Yeah, they compare him to Scholes and stuff, but he's completely different. That's only because of his hair.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you what, gents. Without sounding like Forrest Gump here, Hungary's group reminds me of a tin of Quality Street. Alongside them are dark horses Austria, you've got an unpredictable Portugal, and another surprise story, Iceland. Now, on paper, it doesn't look like the most entertaining group, but I think we'll see some fantastic encounters. What do you guys think?
It looks like a pretty, an outsider looking in, I mean, it looks like a pretty balanced group, and it looks like, you know, with all these championships, I think if a team can find form, get a win in its first game, then, you know, you're really setting a good foundation for getting through to the knockout stages. With it being expanded, with there being the chance of third place teams getting through, then, you know, that I don't see any reason why Hungary wouldn't think that they could get through. I watched some of their games of qualification. I thought they were quite an exciting team to watch. So, you know, I think if they can get off to a decent start, then it builds a foundation. But it looks quite open. You know, there are some groups where you look and you think, doing your predictions, you say that they'll win that group, they'll win that group. It looks fairly straightforward, but I think that could be a group where, you know, teams take points off one another, and that leaves it open to surprises, definitely.
I think what's good about the group is that Hungary actually, on their day, could beat any of the three teams who are in it. I mean, Portugal, obviously a good team, they've got Ronaldo, but they are weak and they are vulnerable, and we could get a win against them. Austria, again, they're one of the outsiders for the tournament, maybe, but they're also beatable, and obviously Iceland are as well, even though Iceland had a great qualification. So obviously it's quite a tough group, because we could end up losing all three, because we are the outsiders in all three, but yeah, like I say, every game is winnable, so it, like Giancarlo just said, it's pretty open as a group.
Mm. And things, you mentioned Austria and how dark horses. I think they won, was it 9 out of their last 10 games? But that form goes out the window when it comes to these tournaments. We've seen it on so many occasions that, you know, teams go into the tournament with, you know, 8 or 9 wins on the bounce, and, you know, they're riding a crest of the wave, and the next thing you know, they lose their opening 2 games, and that's it.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't know. Balas Djuric might end up scoring like a screamer in the first minute, and then we might just hang on for a 1-0 win, and then their tournament's completely upside down, and you don't know, anything can happen.
It's Greece all over again, isn't it?
Imagine that. I think we'll be bigger outsiders in Greece if we win that.
It is actually a good thing that we got Iceland in the group as well. You know, they don't have much experience in big tournaments either.
That's right.
So I think if we can get a draw against Austria, you know, anything can happen after that, because I think this is one of the weakest Portugal side that we had in World Cups and European Championships recently. And also, we beat Iceland, I think, 4 times in the past 5 occasions. So
that's a good omen.
So, yeah. You know, I think if we don't get hammered by Austria, then we have a good chance.
Yeah, I think that second game will probably be crucial against Iceland. Especially if we lose it, then that could be like a must-win or whatever. It's going to be an exciting game, that second one.
The confidence is high at the moment. And that's the thing. If we can get a decent result in the first game, then I'm sure we can go beat Iceland. And with 4 points, you can easily get through the group.
Yeah, definitely.
Giancarlo, Andreas Müller is Hungary's assistant coach, a man who knows all about winning European championships. Having someone there with his experience and knowledge will help their preparations, or so you think.
Oh, definitely. I think these sort of players, I mean, not to say that they wouldn't necessarily have domestically their own players who would have that level of experience. But, you know, I think to bring in someone like that, it does, who can tell you what it's like to win big matches, can pass on that, that type of experience, I think is quite important. I mean, at a different level, Fiorentina, the team I followed, brought in Paulo Sousa, another man that knows about winning things. Fiorentina haven't won anything for a long time. It'd be nice to think that he could pass on that, that winning habit. But I think, I mean, what you tend to find with people who've won a lot as a player is that they demand and expect that of the players that are under them, you know. And so I would expect that he would set pretty high standards for players, or what he would expect from them. And you know that hopefully from a Hungarian point of view, he can pass that on to the players, because if you can transmit that kind of attitude, then you know that can make a real big difference to a side. He definitely was a winner as a player, so you know, you would think a couple of good seasons in Italy, I think. So you know, it's certainly a strong influence, you would imagine.
Tom and David, what can those of us who aren't familiar with Hungary's playing style and the squad in general expect to see from them? Will it be a counter-attacking system like Greece in 2004, or something similar to, say, I don't know, South Korea in 2002?
I think you're right with the Greece comparison. Really, we also score a lot of set piece goals, a bit like Greece, and it will be sitting deep and trying to counter
as well.
Pardon?
We get a lot of 1-0 wins as well.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. We set up quite defensively, and we counter-attack, and we've got great crosses of the ball like Dujac, and to a lesser extent Lovrencic, and we've got the big man up top, probably is going to be Szolai. It's more like a Greece lineup than a passing sort of system like South Korea.
It seems like a very German approach, doesn't it? Greece had Rehagel at the helm for 2004, and now you've got this fella who's got the experience from Germany.
Yeah, exactly. But he's a bit of a wild card, this Stork guy. I mean, he came in as a former Kazakhstan manager, and he was sacked as Kazakhstan manager, I think, and he'd never really had a great record. But he came in as like youth coordinator for Hungary, and then he did he managed the Hungary under-20s and under-21s, and in the under-20 World Cup actually, and then he took over, and then like all his tactical master plans came to fruition, like Kleinheisler. Mm-hmm. Scored on his debut, and then for some reason he plays Tomasz Priskin in the next game, and Priskin scores an absolute worldie. So he's a bit of a wild card, this guy. But like Giancarlo just said, Andy Muller is quite a heavy influence, and as Groffy said earlier in the show, he picked it. Kleinheisler stood out in training, and Muller picked him out, and apparently he sort of does this before, like he sees these players in training, and Stork just trusts him, and then these players get thrown in, and they produce them beautiful. It's hopefully it'll happen in the Euros as well.
Well, put it this way, he can't be anything as bad as Lothar Matthäus, surely.
Hey, Matthäus had a few good games with Hungary. As Hungary manager, we beat Germany 2-0.
Yeah, we beat Germany.
I had to throw that one in. I'm sorry.
How long have been here for about 3 years?
Yeah, I think so. I think he might have been Italy as well.
Yeah, and I think he picked about 115 players in 3 years.
Yeah, I suppose you weren't caught up.
So I don't even know where I was then. I think I was still back at Hibs.
Yeah.
I was only young.
Well, he was offered Hungarian citizenship, wasn't he? So, you know, he must have done something right.
I think the Hungarian FA at the time was in an absolute disarray, so he didn't really have much backing, as it were, and I don't think they really knew what they were doing. And I think when he actually left, his contract just wasn't renewed. He wasn't sacked, or he didn't leave. The incompetence was just so ridiculous at the time in the Hungarian FA that he just sort of stumbled out of the job. It was, I don't know, weird times.
Blimey. And what's the state of Hungarian football like at the moment?
Go on.
Well, I don't know.
Well, Ferencváros won the title again, didn't they? Is that right?
Yeah, and that's the first time since they had their financial meltdown, really. Which is great to see, because they're the most supported club in Hungary. They're the biggest club in Hungary, so it's great to see them back at the top. But if you look at it in terms of their club, how the clubs do in Europe, it's bad. It's between Liechtenstein and the UEFA coefficient rankings, and I think Moldova or something like that. It's not a very big nation, so if you look at it in that terms, it's quite embarrassing level. But you look at the league, and it really is getting better. There's a lot of good teams in there. Ferencváros are a fantastic team, and if they don't go far in Europe this season, I'd be really surprised.
They've got players
like Roland Lama, who used to play for Swansea, Zoltán Gyér, obviously, Tomáš Hajnal used to play in Bundesliga. It's decent.
I actually think they made a good decision. You know, we had 16 teams last year, a couple of seasons ago in the league, and now they reduced it to 12. That actually, I think, made the league stronger.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, it sort of condensed the talent and and it got rid of the worst of teams, and it made the 12 teams stronger, and it got a lot of criticism at the time, but it has made it better, and it is I know you sort of look in from the outside and you sort of see on the league table or whatever, the coefficient table, but there's a lot of good teams in there, and I think that's why Hungary have a sort of this unknown entity, because a lot of our players are home-based and everyone goes, oh yeah, Hungarian league's not very good. But it's better than what people give it credit for, I think anyway, personally.
Well, put this way, if it wasn't any good, you wouldn't be producing all of these players that we've seen throughout the world over the years. You know, there's some fantastic players that have come out of Hungary, and one notable one who did quite well, Real Madrid, if I remember correctly.
It was a different time, that was.
Well, you know, they still talk about it. They still talk about that team.
Yeah, no. I think BBC on their website the other day said it was the best international team of all time.
Mm. Well, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Well, gents, before I let you guys go, who do you think are going to win the tournament? I know it's too early to say, but would you like to hazard a guess or give a prediction?
Well, I can go first, and I think France, Spain, and Belgium will be there, but you know, there's always one or two teams that will surprise us. So, I think if you look at the France squad, that looks pretty strong as well. So, I don't know, the Germany squad changed a bit, and you know, losing Philipp Lahm is a big loss for them. But they can still get there, you know, with the German mentality. Oh, I don't know, if I have to say one, I would go for France.
Oh, he's going with the host nation. Okay. Tom?
I think Spain might do it. I think, I know obviously they had a really bad World Cup and they're maybe not at their best, but I don't know. They've got so much quality, and we've got Morata, I guess, who would play up front for him, and Adarriz on the bench, and I don't know. They've got goals in them, and I think they obviously got so much quality as well. I'd like to see them win it, because I think they got a bit... Well, they were a bit embarrassed. Well, they obviously were embarrassed in the last tournament. I think they were written off a bit too much. So hopefully Spain, yeah.
Brilliant. And Giancarlo?
I was going to see Spain as well, but in that case, I'll go for a dark horse and see maybe Croatia might go all the way. I like the look of the squad. They've got some quite tough guys in there, some quite talented guys in there too, so there's a dark horse prediction, and you'll get a good price off the bookies for that one as well. They've got two Fiorentina players in their squad also, which might have coloured my view a bit, but Nikola Kalinic and Milan Badel playing in the midfield, so I don't know, Kalinic probably not feature much, but there are a lot of players in there that are well known to Serie A fans as well, and I think they could do pretty well.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, gents, before I let you guys go, would you like to give your Twitter handles and websites a quick plug?
Mine is T Mortimer FTBL, so like football. That's my Twitter handle, and then I also run HungarianFootball.com. Yes.
Brilliant. Giancarlo?
But, this is where you regret the silly Twitter handle you gave yourself. Jinkers is my, well, G-I-N TERS is my Twitter name and name. I still write occasionally for Football Italia, the website, and also, as you mentioned, I've got the, if you're looking for, if you've got a few pence to spare, then 20 Great Italian Games and 20 Great Italian Games 2 are available to download or order from Amazon as well.
Brilliant. And Mr. Gruff?
Yeah, mine is at DavidGruff23. Still. Not changed.
Brilliant. Well, gents, it's been an absolute pleasure having all three of you on. Good luck to your nations in Euro 2016. You could say the same for mine, but mine will never qualify because Cyprus are rubbish. So I don't know who I'm going to be supporting, but I wish you guys all the best. And thank you again for appearing on the show. Hopefully you guys can come on during the tournament or maybe afterwards or whenever you guys are free.
Great stuff. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, guys.
Fantastic. Well, guys, this was Shoot the Defence. You can give us a follow at Shoot the Defence. We'll be back soon. Take care now.